Hey everybody, welcome to Viewing Angles, the only movie podcast, and it's part two of our three-part Lord of the Rings rewatch. We've got some good content for you. Two Towers, that's the movie we finished watching, and we got the regular boys. We got Elmer, who's never seen anything before, and Robert, who has seen most of it.
All of it.
All of it. You haven't seen the extended editions.
So. Nope. We'll get to that.
It's a six-part series. Well, yeah. We're just going to rewatch it back-to-back.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to
hit it again.
Extended cut episodes of this podcast for the extended cut versions of the movie.
Yeah, we're actually going to start the extended editions afterwards, but we're going to start with three. So we're going to go in reverse order.
Okay. Yeah, that's how it's meant to be watched.
So much worse. All right. So we're talking about Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers today. And this is the 2002 epic fantasy adventure film directed by Peter Jackson, written by four people whose names that we'll never hear again.
They got their money. They're fucking off now.
Yeah, exactly. Here's some quick stats. Made on a budget of $94 million.
That's crazy.
Box office of $951 million.
Beautiful. Getting that close to a billion back in 2002, that's an achievement.
Just tasting it. So close.
Bonkers. Yeah. It is the fourth highest grossing film of all time. The highest grossing movie of 2002. It was nominated for 6 Academy Awards. And has virtually the same cast as the other one. The same composer. Everyone's carried over. All these movies were pretty much made for the same amount of money.
Are there really no new characters in this movie?
There
is the king
Faramir.
Who's you? Got to give me actors.
True. You don't know any of these actors. Like, these are all random.
The movie? Because I watch these movies, but there's so many names.
The King of Rohan is new.
Okay.
Yeah.
Smeagol is pretty new. Yeah. Carl Urban is new. Yeah.
Gollum is new. So we got Andy.
Oh, isn't that
Gollum?
Weird?
You saw him in the background.
But it's weird how much like. And because I know nothing, right, going into these.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't even like, oh, this is where Gollum showed up. He already felt like he was so in the first movie. There's something about how well these movies just immediately flow into each other in a way you just aren't even expecting with, like, even with the MCU and what it is. Like, it just feels like one already. And I've seen these movies, you know.
Well, it's because I'm telling it's because they made all three back to back. Like, Peter Jackson did this as just one massive cohesive trilogy.
But the fact that it worked, I guess, is what I'm saying. You know, like, hats off.
Right. I think a big part of it is that these were back to back, and so it was easy to keep the tone together. They're all made for roughly the same amount of money. It was just like, we're going to make these three movies. We're going to be doing this for like 3 years.
Yeah.
So buckle up, guys. And I think that the cohesion really helped. Like, people don't even look different.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you sometimes have that change from MCU movie to MCU movie, Harry Potter to Harry Potter. They look like they just started filming again. Like, they look like it's an exact continuation of the story.
Yeah. I hate it when Terrence Howard turns into Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
Man, imagine if
the visual effects.
Obviously, they knew ahead of time, so it was not going to happen. But imagine the tragedy. Let's say someone died. You know, like in Harry Potter, it happened, and you hate to celebrate someone's death, but we kind of netted out positive with the new Dumbledore. Because, like,
yeah, definitely.
I don't even, like, the other guy had no, they weren't giving him anything to work with, but you just can't unsee current Dumbledore. But if this movie lost anyone, because everyone gets so much screen time, like Don Cheadle versus, what's his name?
Terrence Howard.
Terrence Howard. I want to say Cuba Gooding Jr. They actually kind of look
It doesn't matter. Yeah. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You see why Terrence Howard shouldn't have asked for more money.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But in this movie, it would have mattered so much, no matter who it was.
Oh, yeah. Imagine if, like, fucking this movie starts and you just see Daniel Radcliffe instead of Elijah Wood.
That would fuck me up. Probably be a better movie.
It would not work at all. Yeah, who knows? I mean, this is... And I think that it helps the consistency of the characters as well, that they're going back to back to back. You're not getting a lot of tonal shifts in the changes, but when there are changes, like with Frodo, it feels very organic. So like the slow movements, and we're going to see, you know, where he ends up, but like seeing how the ring corrupts him.
I was about to say, like, I don't know how they did it, but I think that what you just said is it. It's like they have, and they're giving themselves the opportunity to go slow. So it does actually just literally, it is organic because they built it in such a way where we're not, we don't have to skip steps. We can just show you everything.
Yeah. Yeah. We're right here. So a little background on this movie is that this is apparently one of the most difficult ones to write because the way that the book is structured is in two parts. They talk about what's going on with Frodo and Sam, and the other part is they talk about with Teppin with Aragorn and all and everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's divided that way. So they had a way to construct it to make these a little bit more connected. And we also have certain things. Shelob is not in this, although the second book ends that way. And Boromir, actually, in the beginning of The Two Towers, dies. So things have been edited around a little bit. A few things were created wholly out of thin air for this. The whole Aragorn falling off and coming back, completely created for that. The hobbits being taken to Osgiliath, they never go there in the book. The whole Arwen is really mostly mentioned in the appendices of these books. She's not really a full-on character. And they were able to introduce some more scenes with her by putting things as flashbacks. Mm-hmm. So that's why those scenes with Aragorn and Arwen, they do kind of seem, now that I was rewatching it, a little out of place. And you're kind of like, what is she talking about?
It's because they go so long, right? And I think that's one of the, that is like, spoiler alert, one of my favorite parts of this movie. Even though I do agree with you that like, because it's been pretty even spread with the first movie and the second movie, you notice the moment we're spending time around none of the eight main characters they set up at this point.
Yeah, like, there are so many fucking characters in this ensemble cast. Oh man, there's 23 credited actors. Not just cast members, credited actors in this movie.
I love it.
It's so nuts.
Yeah. It's really like this is a miracle of filmmaking. The fact that they were able to so successfully adapt this so well.
And the fact that like Jackson knew to like, he knew it was important. Like he treated it with so much respect.
Mm-hmm.
It just blows my mind to see, to not having seen this and then realizing now how much this shit just informed literally everything. Like, culture after this was just not the same.
Mm-hmm. Fucking D&D. He made nerds, man. He's responsible for nerds.
Exactly. There's a lot of interesting stuff in this movie that they kind of add around. Like in Theoden, King of Rohan, being under the influence of Saruman, completely created for the movie.
But really?
It works. It works. That's so one well. Of the better scenes in the movie, definitely. Let's just give like a quick... this movie, everyone kind of knows that it's... I mean, people have seen this movie a lot. Maybe they haven't seen it in a while, but we kind of get the continuation of the story of Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli trying to save Merry and Pippin, following them after they're taken. And then Merry and Pippin ended up going through the Fantastic Forest and meeting some talking tree people. And Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli meet up with a new country called Rohan, Country of Men, and their king, Theoden, is having a tough time. So they help him get out of his funk and bring all the people of Rohan to Helm's Deep, which is their fortress where the big climactic battle happens. And you get Frodo and Sam, who are just trying to get to Mordor. Just trying to get there.
Yeah. They have one goal.
And they get pretty close, yeah.
I really wasn't expecting this movie to keep them split up the entire time. It's such a badass flex. The only kind of flex you can do when you have a trilogy like this so well crafted. But they build up the Fellowship. The Fellowship mm-hmm. kind of falls apart.
Immediately breaks yeah. apart with the first sign of adversity.
And they actually do not give us, even at the end, like I kept waiting during the big battle. I was like, okay, the trees are going to pop in, then Frodo's going to, I don't know what the fuck Frodo's going to help here. He shouldn't be here, actually, but in my dumb brain, I was just like, yeah, everyone's going to come here. This is what's happening. But this movie's just not scared to not really, you know, it ends, it's just a very satisfactory ending, but you're just like, this doesn't matter in the long term. This is,
yeah,
these are side quests.
Exactly. This is the best way possible. Shit that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is just Middle Earth.
And we will see that all this keeps building. I think this is why Two Towers is... I have a hard time between Two Towers and Fellowship of the Ring, which one I like more. Obviously, my favorite's Return of the King. But Two Towers feels like such a like loading up your punch for the third movie, where you're seeing all these pieces come together, and you're just like, yeah. Give me the big shit. Like, I know it's coming.
To me, like the Helm's Deep battle, that's some pretty big shit. And I think that, yeah. that like, that's a fucking 45-minute battle sequence.
Right, which is almost as crazy as what happened, is the third movie.
Yeah.
It is definitely the starter. I think that sets the tone. Yeah. It's the benchmark.
It's like an appetizer.
Yeah. It's just, well, I think it's iconic because it's contained. And there's not a lot of cross-cutting once you're in the battle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we are in the battle. The whole movie, you're switching perspectives between the different characters. For the bulk of Helm's Deep, it is like, from when the rain starts coming down, it's like, oh man, here we go.
Yeah, and that scene, they build up tension so well for that battle. Because you have, like, you know, Aragorn talking to the king about how he's trying to keep his people's spirits up and make sure that they don't just fucking flee the battle. And Aragorn's like, no, we're gonna fucking lose. You gotta send people out to get help.
Gondor will help.
Yeah, yeah.
Gondor will come to aid.
But just the tension of, like, you have them all, you know, you see all the kids putting armor on for battle. You realize just how desperate they are as a people. Like, this is it. And when you start seeing the fucking Uruk-hai army marching forward, and, like, they all just pause, like, you know, 100 feet from the wall and start, like, chanting and yelling, and all the people are, like, nervously holding their arrows ready to fire. I'm just like, something's gonna happen. And then the fucking old man just, like, accidentally lets go of an arrow and it all just pops off from there. Ah, what a fucking sequence.
It's so, the tension is so good, man. I just don't, this movie gets no benefit of the doubt for me, because it's just not shit I care about at all. But it is, like, chills, like, just thinking about it, you know?
Yeah.
Let alone,
I just
want to
watch it again.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, like, it is just one of, like, it makes every hype moment in the MCU kind of a joke. And I only bring up the MCU because, you know, something that many people saw and enjoyed. But it's just so, the cross-cutting within that fight gives you such a good, like, mixture of showing not only the scale of the conflict, but also, like, the intimacy when we zoom in. Like, just this, it's so fucking sad all the time. All these, like you said, the old man just letting his fucking arrow go. Then it's, like, cute with Legolas and the dwarf just counting kills.
Yeah.
It just switches so much back and forth. I don't know how it effectively balances so much in such an already massive, dense movie.
I think the pace of the battle just adds so much to it, because that you need good pacing in a battle. You need it to be a roller coaster for it to last 45 minutes. And I think they do such a good job with, like, you know, they have the upper hand for a little bit when they're all, like, all the orcs are climbing the ladders.
Is this it? Is this all that Sauron can muster to defeat us?
And they're counting and laughing, like, as they're killing orcs, and then all of a sudden the fucking suicide bomber comes in and blows a fucking hole into the wall. And that is, like, I love how long they linger on that shot and just show, like, the cement blocks of the wall dropping onto the army and just, like, how massive of a defeat that was. And it's like, oh, shit, I didn't realize the tides could turn that quickly.
Yeah, here, we're stepping on most rewatchable scene. But let's go through the categories. We all got the hype going so hard.
I love this movie. I love it.
The Two Towers is super important for the trilogy because you can make one good movie, you can make Fellowship pretty good. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, wow, that was good. I wonder if they can do this. And then Two Towers is like, all right, we're in for it. Like, this is happening. Like, yeah, this is really happening.
I just love looking at the Metacritic score for these movies and seeing how, like, it. The first one is the worst, and it just goes up from there. I feel like that doesn't happen with any other trilogy.
Right, exactly. There are some where it gets better from one to two.
Oh, but yeah.
I don't know if there's any that
where the third is the best from
two to three.
It's only Lord of the Rings.
The third is the best and also the longest.
Yeah. What a fucking film miracle, man. Peter Jackson.
Yeah. Wonder what he been doing since then.
He made King Kong once.
Crazy shit.
He did. Which is also a great movie. I love that movie.
It is great. It's also 3 hours fucking long.
Yeah.
That's what I want to rewatch now with what I'm learning about Peter Jackson.
Oh, let's do it. I'm down.
Yeah. All right. Who was the Lord of the Ring in this movie? Who's the most valuable player, we think?
Yeah. Elmer, here's some nominees.
We got Frodo, Sam, the entire Fellowship, basically. Make any argument for them.
Yeah.
We got newcomers Gandalf the White.
Yeah. Is he really a new character, though?
No, yeah, definitely not.
Dude, that reveal.
It's so good.
It's the most amazing.
I just love when he throws the robes off and just shines for the king. Like,
yeah.
It's so good.
I've got some more in special effect for that scene specifically. But we've got newcomers Gollum. We got Treebeard. Wormtongue. Aomer, Aowen, all these. What's my biggest criticism about J.R. Tolkien in the way that he named things is that he's got this very strict, like, here's the structure of it. And so everyone sounds like they got the same fucking name.
Yeah, like Sauron and Saruman.
That shit's fucked up.
Yeah, who
comes
up with that shit? Yeah. And then we got, Saruman. Anyone else that I'm missing?
I think those are the big ones.
Yeah. Who are we going to argue? I think I'm going to throw my hat in for Sméagol, Gollum. I think he is so iconic in this movie. And Andy Serkis is just throwing punches. He is like, it is like watching a major league baseball player going and playing in a minor league game. You're just like, why is this guy is way better? Like, this guy is doing way much, a lot more than anybody else.
Dude, Andy Serkis is a fucking crazy. He's a beast, man. He's a fucking animal. I'm like, watching him work is terrifying, but I love it.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think that he does normal roles now, like normal, quote unquote, where he's just a regular actor. But this is the thing that kind of catapulted him in, like, so much that I don't think we know too many other people who played CGI characters that we readily know.
Mm-mm.
Like, oh yeah, we know Andy Serkis is the guy.
Yeah.
He's got the physicality.
There's literally
the
physicality
and the voice.
Benedict Cumberbatch did play the dragon in Desolation of Smaug.
Never seen it. Don't know if that's good or not.
It's actually pretty good. You should watch it, but you should, before watching that, watch the behind-the-scenes mocap of Benedict Cumberbatch playing Smaug.
Oh, I've seen that.
It's fucking great.
Yeah. What about you guys? Who are your choices? Who's the Lord of the Ring?
Gollum is the rich man's champion. Like, obviously he's going to come out on top. Like, you're not wrong. But
who's your runner-up?
But I think the people's champion, the working man's champion, Samwise.
Yeah.
Samwise does so much for this movie. Like, everyone thinks that, like, they should want to be a Frodo. But, like, you're not a Frodo. Like, no one goes through that kind of self-sacrifice for a greater cause. That's just not realistic. There's one in a million, and that's fine. Because we need a lot of Samwises out there that are just doing and sacrificing for the greater cause, even though they're not going to have any of the glory. And
none of the smoke.
None of it, dude. And he just does so much to ground in a movie where, like, no insult. Like, I kind of joke around on not liking Elijah Wood's performance. I think he's incredible in this movie. I think this is perfect. Mm-hmm. He is he's doing so much good here. But he's basically not in this movie. Right? Like he's not. And Samwise has to carry those sections in such an impossible way. He is the least interesting character of the two. There's nothing really that like dynamic going on about him. But he, his presence and the comfort he's able to bring to the sadness of Frodo slowly like being
losing
corrupted,
his fucking mind.
Yeah, it's. I was just blown away the entire movie. I was just like, "That's the man I want in my corner every time."
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
I he definitely it. Does a good job playing off of Gollum and Frodo both going through their ring stuff, and he's kind of like, I don't understand what y'all are going through. I just know we got to get to the mountain place. I don't even know where we're going, but we just got to keep going east, man.
That is actually true. I think there is some like something too. Like, I feel like it's harder to act that small, you know, like while everyone else around you is having the most fun, they're just chewing up every scene they get because it's the best parts ever written. And then you just have to be so grounded and, like, nice.
100%. Rob, who are you throwing your hat in the ring for most valuable?
I think I gotta give it to Smeagol. Just because I love how tragic of a character that he is. And I love that you get this, like, I forgot just how much of a dynamic you get between him and Gollum in this movie, and like how much Smeagol actually wants to be good and like help Sam and
Smeagol
Frodo.
Is good.
Yeah.
Smeagol starts good. Precious is.
Yeah. Gollum is what's, you know, corrupting him. But I think it balances that so well, where it's like you kind of understand and sympathize with him as a character when it's like, oh, he's clearly fucked up and any wrongdoing, like he's already wary of Frodo as a person. So any kind of wrongdoing, like when the the Gondor riders fucking capture Smeagol and like put a like rope around his neck and throw a bag on his head, I'm just like, I'm sorry, dude, like you don't deserve this.
It's so good, man. Sam
thinks he deserves it.
Cutting back and forth between himself.
Yeah, and
that's
all Andy Serkis,
dude. How is that? I wish that was the whole movie. That shit was like time stopping. Like I was just so enthralled.
And he's so good. He pops off the screen so much that you kind of notice that the CGI doesn't hold up super well, but he's just so in it and you can just see the life behind the character.
Yeah.
That it doesn't make it. You're just like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
This is with 2002. The character still looks pretty amazing.
Oh yeah.
Convinced James Cameron that Avatar could happen,
so right,
for better or for worse.
I think it's the way that Smeagol interacts with the how he just interacts with the environment too that makes it feel so grounded and real.
Yeah, and he comes off right out of the gate too. He's in the movie within the first like 3 minutes.
Yeah,
he pretty much opens with him on there
crawling towards the pair. Yeah,
yeah, he's terrifying. Okay, let's go into the depths of Middle Earth, where we discuss the scariest, most intimidating villain. Here's some nominees. We've got Gollum, obviously. We'll say Gollum, not Smeagol, you know.
Yeah.
We've got new dragon ring wraiths.
Yeah, they upgraded.
They upgraded. We've got a newly wily Saruman. Along with a worm tongue, the greasiest motherfucker in a world of greasy motherfuckers.
Really quick, because he's not the winner, obviously.
The worm tongue?
No.
I just want to talk about worm tongue really quick. One interesting, just why does he look like him and Snape are the same kind of energy? Like almost one to one. And I know, like, Order of the Books and Order of the Movies, like, not intentional at all, but they have the same fucking vibe. Like, you could have replaced Alan Rickman and, what's his name? Skarsgård.
Yeah.
And they would have done fine as the opposite role.
I think that one noticeable difference is that Wormtongue looks like he's been drinking.
Oh yeah, like, he's hard.
So
I mean, greasy is the right word.
Yeah,
he is greasy.
He looks
up.
Like he's been getting blackout drunk every night and going to like Denny's to get a grand slam every morning. Like, yeah. He looks bad. Dude. And somehow, like, that's the only calories he ingests for the entire day is getting blackout at night and grand slam.
Dude, there's a lot of dead bodies in this movie. A lot of people's heads get cut off. The grossest scene in this movie is when he touches the daughter's face.
Yeah, just, she's like, ugh.
Yeah, it's so disgusting. I hated it so much.
Oh, God. And the Eye of Sauron, I'll throw that in there, because I think that has got a little bit more screen time in this movie. Just, like, the effect it has.
A little bit,
Frodo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, there's not too many, and just like the overall, the Uruk-hai army, I'll throw that fucking in there, because they're the one berserker. I think that the berserker Uruk-hai is actually that specifically, the ones with the no armor, and they look like
they just fucking
Jason.
Take it.
Yeah, they look like the guy from Borderlands.
Oh, the cover. Like the psycho.
Yeah. Definitely. Other than that, is there anything else I missed?
No, I think that's all of them. I think my, you know, for each of these villains, they all have a pair, right? Some kind of pairing in the story.
Yeah.
And I think it has to go to Gollum, because Samwise and Frodo are the only two characters you're truly scared for. You know, like, they're so fucking vulnerable, and, like, I don't trust Gollum for a goddamn second, and it's sad that I don't, but I don't.
I mean,
and versus, you know, like, Saruman is awesome, but Gandalf's gonna fucking whip his ass. There's no question about that.
He's the new white.
I mean, dude. Trees are already whipped his ass.
Right,
oh,
yeah.
The trees are so awesome.
Yeah, I love Treebeard.
There is a great story in the Silmarillion where one of the Valar, who are basically Gandalf's bosses, and you got Manwë, who's like the best god. They make the trees, and one of the other gods comes up and he's like, "Can I make the trees talk?" And Manwë is like, "Weird, but fine, I guess." And that's it. Like, yeah, the trees talk, man.
Is that one of the last entries?
Oh, man. Do I need to read the Silmarillion now? God.
Yeah, that's part of it. They're just like, that's a peculiar request, but
okay.
Granted.
Yeah.
They're just made by like some bored god.
Can I make the trees talk?
Sure, dude. Whatever. I don't care. Yeah, I think I'm going to you have to give it to Gollum. I hate giving it to like him all the way. But I think he really is kind of the star of this movie. And the thing that registered to me is most original, most like what this movie is known for, besides Helm's Deep.
Yeah, I agree. I think Gollum deserves it. And just that unease you have the entire time watching him with Sam and Frodo, I think is more intimidating than like the orc army, as terrifying as that was. But I also want to give a shout out to the marshes that they had in the beginning of the movie with all like the perfectly preserved corpses. That shit gave me nightmares when I was a child. That is horrifying.
That is scary.
And I think it's because like they're not decomposing. It's just like, dude, that's not what happens in swamps. Like those bodies should be fucking, they should be skeletons and shit.
Yeah. They're not bodies. They're projections.
Yeah.
Or some shit.
Oh yeah. That scared the shit out of me when I was younger.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the scary. This is like a scary, like the first one is scary, but kind of in a B movie, like campy way.
Except for when
kind of turns it up,
when Bilbo goes full demon and tries to grab the ring, that's still terrifying.
Yeah, still way too scary.
This movie is definitely darker in every sense of that word, right? Like,
oh yeah,
it's edgier. I mean it's
bleaker.
Yeah,
it's so bleak.
Yeah,
yeah.
People die fucking hard in that battle. Like, again, I can't stop thinking about the dude who got harpooned when they're putting, like, the big ladders up, and they're shooting the harpoons up to get him, and one of the dude just gets impaled and goes flying off the wall. And then the other guy, when they break through the door with the battering ram, who's just on the other end of it and immediately gets impaled by like a fucking 2x4 and pushed up against the wall. I'm like, oh, this is hard.
Yeah, I've a nitpick about one of those things, but another one is when they're the wall has just been blown up,
mm-hmm.
and they're charging the orc army, and Aragorn is running in front and he hits away one of the spears, but one of the elves just gets it right through the gun. It's just like, hoo-ah! And you can see it go through him and they cut away real fast.
Yeah.
But it's so disturbing.
Hey, Aragorn's what matters, man.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on to the specialist special effect. What's the coolest special effect in this movie? Now I'm gonna change because I think we all might be thinking Gollum.
Mm.
I'm gonna say the miniature that is Helm's Deep.
Yeah, I think
they make it a full out miniature. It's like you can see what it looks like if you just like do a Google search. But it's pretty big, but it's still like small. They make it. It is seamless. It looks so good, and it's so iconic. They just created it out of nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I think Gollum is the winner, but it's too easy. So yes, I think, but that's such a good one because at no point did I stop and think, how did they do this? Because I just bought in. I was like, oh yeah, this is probably somewhere real. Like,
oh yeah, they just built this in New Zealand.
Yeah, this
right?
is just an old castle in New Zealand. Yeah. Like
I don't know. That's how dumb I am. I don't know shit about New Zealand. They probably have castles.
Yeah, who knows? But I think that's the reason why I say the Helm's Deep over Gollum is that I think Gollum. The performance, I think, is what really sells it. The CGI is good.
Yeah.
But you can see it's starting
ages.
To be frayed at the edges a little bit.
But Helm's Deep looks perfect still. Like, that is still perfect. An ageless, a timeless battle sequence.
Yeah, it looks better. Like, even better than most things that we
Cause,
see.
Yeah, because everything's CG
big budget
now.
Today. Yeah. And this, I'm sure this didn't cost that much to make, you know, compared to doing, like, just shipping it off to Taiwan or wherever so that kids can work 50 hour weeks nonstop to get the newest special effects done on the latest Illumination movie.
Oh god,
that was a long sentence.
You had a
but
point
I think
make,
that's
though.
Yeah, that's my favorite. It holds up really well, and Helm's Deep still looks so good.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think that entire battle sequence is great, and again, the practical effects of everything, fucking killing it. As notable as the CG effects in this movie are between like Gollum and Treebeard, they still look good and better than a lot of other stuff, especially from that time period, but they are starting to age. But anything practical in this movie looks better than, you know, a lot of stuff today. And it looks like if they were to remake Lord of the Rings, it's probably going to look better than the Amazon series.
100%. And the Amazon series has like the same budget for these movies.
Right? Yeah.
Crazy. I think one thing I alluded to earlier is when they reveal Gandalf the White,
mm-hmm.
they actually take Christopher Lee and Ian McKellen's voices and they mix them together and they kind of move the equalization around. And then they take Christopher Lee's eyes and they put it on Gandalf. They put it on Ian McKellen. To really just disorient people.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah. It is jarring. Elmer, did you have any idea that whole thing was coming up?
I mean, I was like, something's happening. Because they're not, you know, if nothing was happening, you would just show it.
The White Wizard is here.
You know, you would just do the thing. So I knew something was up. But
he is on the cover.
I tried not to show him the cover of the movies.
Yeah,
I mean, I knew
it is funny that he's on the fucking.
I knew he wasn't dead without ever having the thought he's not dead. You know, like I just like there's no way he's gonna
his
come.
Spirit just persisted.
Yeah, maybe. Well, no, like he's gonna come in the third movie.
You just knew.
You know, and then he showed up here, and I was like, "That's awesome!" Because what a you know waste if he did die.
Shout out to the whole sequence, like how this movie opens up with Gandalf and the Balrog falling through the chasm, and then like Gandalf and the Balrog just go on to battle for fucking 8 days.
Oh like, yeah, and the way that they do like the recap. Yeah,
like even that looks good.
So good. And they, the way they do the little recap of like the Fellowship of the Ring by having the camera just go throughout Moria, the Misty Mountains, and then just hearing everything going on in the mines, and then cutting to the scene, and just, and then doing the continuation of like, all right, you think you saw everything. Now here's some crazy shit where we're going to follow down the hole.
And they serve and you it just thought up. Like, they deliver. It's like, they how crazy could it be? It's the craziest thing you've ever seen.
Yeah. It gets so much crazier.
Oh, man. Yeah, that all of that shit ruled so hard.
Yeah, so this good transition into the most rewatchable scene. I'll go give a few. We got to do Helm's Deep battle, obviously, but I'm going to try and break that into a few different segments.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long sequence.
Yeah, so I'm going to break that into a few different scenes. We've got just the opening, like they haven't started fighting yet until they do the slamming their poles on the ground and actually start the fight. Mm-hmm. That whole opening. We've got the berserker running through with explosive to blow up the wall and the wall explosion and that whole aftermath. And then the falling action of them being caved in at the keep and then busting out. Another nominee outside of Helm's Deep, we have Smeagol origin, like right when he's crawling up there. That's a great one. The scene of the Ents all fucking up Isengard.
Mm-hmm.
Big deal. The scene of Gandalf knocking out Saruman from Theoden's brain. another banger. Not a lot of Merry and Pippin stuff in here. Honestly, I think their story gets us to a lot of places, but overall, I'm just like, keep going. Like, less. Don't make him talk.
Yeah,
like,
I think they dwell on them just enough, because I do like that speech right when they're about to give up on like talking to the Ents, and you know, I forget which one is which, but one of them is just like, let's just go back to the Shire, like let's just go fucking eat and enjoy what we have as hobbits. Like, this is bigger than us. We don't need to fucking worry about this. And then the other one is just like, no, you don't understand what's at stake. Like,
it won't be a Shire.
Yeah. And I love how that these characters are comic relief, but they still understand what's at stake. Like, they're not stupid about what they're actually fighting for.
Yeah, this is the beginning of their dramatic turn, which is fully fleshed out in Return of the King.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I can't wait for that. Because I was always happy when we cut back to them, even though I know they weren't really adding much. I was just so excited to, like, let's get these trees in the mix, period, because these trees need to be in a fight for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, get everyone in here.
But what Robert was just talking about, like, the way they reframe it, or not even reframe it, but just, like, remind you that, like, they know. Like, yeah. I know this has been fun in games, but, like, this is a big boy movie. Put your big boy
right.
pants
and
on.
And they're comic relief and they're goofy. And the way the comic relief in this movie is great. Like, the way they have Legolas and Gimli having their, like,
it's,
chumminess.
It's so much better than, like, what Marvel's been doing for the past 10 years, where it's, like, it's not trying to subvert dramatic moments with, like undercutting something with, like, a quip or, like, a funny needle drop. It's just, these characters are just legitimately funny just the way they are. Like,
it's
Gimli
just, like,
just
take it seriously. It's trying to be charming instead of trying to be funny. You know, it's, like, they're just, like, let's show you that these guys have bonded. The first movie is called Fellowship of the Ring. We didn't give you any of that in the first movie.
Yeah.
Like,
they hadn't bonded yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man. The whole toss me scene, though.
Oh, the
fucking
toss me.
Gold.
The toss me scene. Yeah, that is that's its own scene for sure.
Yeah.
don't tell the
don't
elf.
Don't tell the elf. Toss me.
Yeah. Gandalf describing where he's been. Great.
Yeah.
We're on the mountain, we fought, and I smote his ass.
Yeah. After 8 days.
Yeah. And then I died. And I went back and I said, hey, can I stick around here? And
like,
Manway was like, did you beat Sauron? He's like, well, no, but I beat a Balrog. He's like, get back inside.
Yeah. But here's
you
a level boost.
Job.
Here's an XP boost. You leveled up. You're more powerful now. You get that for killing
you're in
Balrog.
Charge now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously Gollum and Smeagol having their little face off, where Smeagol tells him to go away forever.
There are too many, there are too many scenes to nominate for this category. Like,
it's a 3-hour long movie, but I think that's all of them.
This whole movie, I mean, I feel, I'm so ready to rewatch.
Potatoes.
Yeah. Again, potatoes.
Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
Also, just shout out to Sam again when, like, Frodo wants to put on the ring to hide from the Ringwraith again, and Sam just fucking grabs his hand and holds onto it and is like, no, don't. I'm like, I'm here. Like, hold on to me instead.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck, it's me.
It's your Sam.
Yeah. God, this is a tough choice. I don't even know anymore.
I think I got it. I want to give a shout out to one that's not on the list. Just the elf flashback, the extended one, where it's, what's the girl...
Oh, Arwen.
Arwen.
You got Hugo Weaving's monologue talking about death.
That whole monologue about death is like, you know, I'm playing, starting a new D&D campaign, and I was reading like pages from the book about like different classes and races, and it gave me that feeling where I was like, holy shit, they thought about this. This is cool. Like, to even explore the idea that elves have this fucked up to us sense of like, time and perspective, like it's not even worth dealing with humans because they will be 1/10 of your life if you're lucky. Like it's just so cool to just explore and even fuck around with that when you could have easily just not done that. Give me more fights.
Yeah, ignored,
you know?
It.
Like it's awesome.
But I think it does pose like the question. I mean, it'll come into play later. Of Elrond's like, I gotta go back. I don't want to be here anymore. This is not fun. Let me go join all the other immortal people, out over in the other continent. And please, daughter, come with me, because you know, he's as much as you love him, he's dead.
Yeah.
Like even though he's going to live an insane length of life.
Yeah.
Like he is Elmer. Something that I guess both of you have missed in the extended edition. Aragorn is 80 years old. They reveal in this movie.
Hmm.
So that's
have you
like
seen the extended editions?
I have, yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know you'd seen them.
Yeah. So they reveal that Aragorn is a part of a like higher order of like man who has an extended life.
Oh, okay.
And he actually, they bring it up by saying what the daughter of Theoden comes up and he's like, oh, my dad said he like knows you from way back like at this battle with my grandfather.
Mm-mm.
He's like, oh, wow, I can't believe he remembers that, because he was just a kid when that happened.
Damn.
It's like, what?
Damn.
Fuck, so I want to watch the extended editions now.
Yeah.
Yeah, even Aragorn is like, I am still, like, super young. I'm 80 years old, and, like, this guy who thinks he's king, I'm like, I know when you were a kid, like,
yeah,
and you're going to die before I am even old. Like, but I still got to invest in this, in your shitty fucking war.
Yeah. It's awesome, too, that, like, I don't know how, like, intentional it is, but this also informs, like, Legolas, you know? You know he has the same perspective without really, like, lingering on it. And I think it's interesting because of what I feel about Orlando Bloom today. It's like, oh, he's big, right? But he's really not doing much in this movie. I think that's the character we've explored the least. Maybe it's... I mean, even the dwarf, like, we don't explore much about him, but we explore what his personality is like way more. I hope, you know, we get more of Legolas in 3, but I felt like this at least gave us something to make me think about, like, oh, shit, like, because that's when I asked Robert, like, what is Legolas' age? And we looked it up, and even just, like, the fact that I cared about that shit means it worked.
How old is he?
He's, like, 2,900 years old.
He's old as shit. He's like a veteran of war. And it's so interesting because he's so handsome and young. You're like, he's 17.
Yeah.
20.
Yeah.
But you're like, oh, well, that's just because that's what elves look like. But it just reframes that whole character. Like, this is a fucking war veteran who's, like, seen some shit.
Oh, yeah. He's seen some shit. He can do some shit. Fucking kick-flipping shields into dudes' chests.
Yeah. That's
it. One of the greatest scenes of all time.
Yeah.
Iconic. I think my pick for the most rewatchable is the beginning of Helm's Deep and just the whole setup. Where they're being like, their armor is weak under the neck and under the arm.
Yeah.
Like, at the neck and under the arm. I'm like, oh, God. And when they first start going at it, you get the feeling of, you know, when you're playing a game or anything and you're just, you're taking out a few people, and you're like, oh, I'm doing so good. And then you realize that you're completely outmatched.
Yep.
You're like, oh, well, we did so much already. It's like, you still have so much left to go. Like, yeah. It feels like you're level 15 battling something level 50 and you've been doing perfect, but you know that one hit from the other team and you're done.
Dude, it's Dark Souls. It's fucking Dark Souls.
It is Dark Souls, yeah. And they just barely won.
Do you ever play the Two Towers game on like PS2 or Xbox or GameCube or whatever?
Yes, I've played all the Lord of the Rings games. That initial trilogy of games.
Yeah, the Helm's Deep level from that game. I just remember being so much fucking fun, but also so hard because it was just like, yeah, man, you just gotta kill orcs until like Gandalf gets here. Like it's a fucking survival mission at this point.
Keep kicking down ladders and killing Uruk-hai. Mm-hmm. Yeah. God. All right. Which ones did you guys say?
I mean, I'm going to go with Gandalf releasing the king. That whole sequence, you're not going to take a cane from an old man, are you?
I'm so old.
It's such a good bit. And then, you know, you get some action there with them defending him as he's like gracefully fucking gliding towards the king. And then just that whole thing. Like, I just love the high drama parts of these movies so much. Like, as much as I like the action, probably more, I think, because of what I call my rewatchables. But some of that shit is just like, these are just the best actors in the world hanging out. Feels great.
Yeah, just slinging it.
I love how effortless. Cathartic that scene feels, too, with only like that's in the first act of the movie. But it just felt so good to have Gandalf like resolve that king storyline and like see him finally be freed after hearing about like, oh, this is what's happened to the kingdom of Rohan. Like he's letting it all fall to shit. His offspring.
Like, I've done what?
Yeah, my son's dead. What?
I've raised taxes by how much?
Yeah. Oh man, and then that scene when he's like mourning the death of his son, and he's just like, no parent should have to bury their own child. Like,
which is like a corny line, but I mean, not like a corny line, but it's been done to death. Right. Yeah. He makes it real. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's like, of course.
Yeah. You felt that emotion.
Yeah. That I should be the one to see the end of my house.
Yeah. But man, I think I would probably give it to the beginning of Helm's Deep as well. I just think it's so much fun to see. Like, the battle's great. I love when it all pops off. It's so satisfying to finally have that release of like, oh yeah, this is what we've been building to the entire movie. And then just seeing Legolas and Gimli just having fun counting how many people they're killing. Legolas is skateboarding down some stairs while shooting dudes. Gimli's just going ham and like burying his axe into people's chests.
Yeah, it does. There is a certain leeway that we give this movie because we know that it's Uruk-hai and they're just mindless like creatures.
Yeah.
Where they're people. Like, let's count how many we kill. And meanwhile, people are being murdered.
Yeah.
Like right next to them. It's like 17, 18.
Yeah.
That Uruk-hai has a fucking family. He has a kid.
Little Uruk-hai baby. Terrifying.
Ew. Kill it.
All right. Now my favorite part of the pod, nitpicks. Let's pick some nits, boys. This is my first one, and this is the one that I thought of immediately. When they're going through the marshes, and they're like, "Get down! The Ringwraiths are coming!" And he's on a dragon.
Yeah.
Why they had dragons the whole time? Why did they start with horses?
Maybe they didn't have them the whole time. Maybe they're just like, because maybe they underestimated the hobbits. They're like, yeah, they're fucking hobbits, man. We don't even need to put these resources towards it.
It's like having like a Porsche in the garage and taking out your Camry, like to go on a race.
Yeah, well, it's not to go on a race. It's to go do a chore. It's just like, yeah, I mean, I don't want to fucking have someone ding my car if I go to the grocery store in a Porsche. So I'm going to take the Camry.
This is the one ring of power.
Yeah, but it's being carried by a hobbit. They're halflings. Nobody actually thinks hobbits are threats, which is why they're such good main characters.
Robert's whispering halflings just reminds me of one of my favorite moments in the movie, which was, you know, we spend so much of the first chunk with everyone separated, specifically Frodo, Samwise, and Gollum, right? Just the three of them. And then the first time they bump into the raiders, the other humans, I was reminded, like, oh shit, yeah, the halflings are short as fuck. Like, we didn't have anything with actual scale around them. Because the first one does it so much. It's constantly reminding you, look at these guys, they're short. They're tiny.
Yeah, they're tiny.
Yeah.
But in this, you don't get it till like, literally 2 hours into the movie. And it's, I was like, I completely forgot. It was just funny.
Yeah, it's just Frodo and Sam and Smeagol, who was basically like a hobbit, yeah, something like it.
Like, they're the same
height. And it's like, yeah, they're all short. Yeah. And he's, like, crunched over the whole time.
Yeah, so he looks small.
Yeah.
My nitpick is actually in the same section you're talking about, Dan, with that dragon.
Go for it.
Why did the dragon just leave? Like, you were on the trail disappeared, and you're just like, all right, fuck it, I gotta go 300 miles that way?
I think they're just checking the marsh.
Yeah.
Okay. They were okay. I thought they were sus already.
No, nah, like they were recon.
Tracking or something.
Because he hadn't put the ring on since, so they wouldn't have been able to track him.
Okay. Okay.
They're just like, nobody goes through the marsh. I'll be able to see people in the marsh, right?
Yeah.
That's the. It's not even like a high level ring wraith. Just one of the regular guys.
Yeah.
Well, see, at that point, I was confused too because all of a sudden, one of the ring wraiths had a dragon, and I was like, oh, is this like the general? Is this the ring wraith, you know? But then it's just like, oh, it's just
their armies just got upgraded. Yeah,
the Witch King. Yeah, the Witch King only becomes kind of a badass in the third one.
Oh, but it's so fucking oh man,
so hype. Okay, I got another nitpick. So Helm's Deep is just they built this castle here, and they're like, all right. Just in case.
Yeah. Like, well, it's because it's...
Like, they don't live there? Like,
no, it's a fortress.
The first time I saw it, my first thought was like, so you what do they do when they need anything? Like, it's just so much work. Why would you build out there? Because
they're not living there. It's literally just a fortress to withstand battles like that because the reason they live out in the pastures is so that they can farm.
Right, so then if my point is dumb... Then we go back to Dan's point, which is they just built a just in case. Well,
they didn't build it. Some other like civilization built it. Yeah.
No, I think they built it specifically for
them. That's what it seemed like. It was there. Because he said it's a matter of fact.
Anytime we come into trouble, like, because even Saruman knows, like, hey, they're going. We all know where they're going. They're going to Helm's Deep.
I want to look up the history. Settled by the men of. Oh, it's from, so it was, it used to belong to Gondor, and then Gondor abandoned it, and now fucking Rohan just uses it when they please.
So they're just squatting in there.
Yeah.
And it is, I guess, like a better, from a military perspective, you know.
It's a great position.
Great position. If they're coming for you, if that's the situation you're in where you don't have a choice, fucking definitely go there. You got a valley, the only way in. It's the only reason they won that battle. They were just funneling enemies.
Oh, yeah. Fucking 300 and the fucking hot gates.
Okay, so... Basically, so it was first created by the men of Gondor, who constructed the Hornburg during the Second Age, when Gondor gave the plains to the... horse people who become Rohan, they also, so they basically owned all this area, and then they had these horse people who are like, we're just out here being horse people.
Yeah.
And Gondor's like, we don't need this, you just take all this and don't bother us with your horse stuff anymore. So no more horse conventions.
Get your fucking horses out of here. Yeah.
I hate horses so much, I'm going to give you this land for free.
Yeah, just to keep you out of our land. Keep you and your fucking horses away from us.
I fucking hate horses so much. We've talked about this before, Rob. But
yeah, I'm very anti-horse.
Every time I see a horse die in a movie, I'm like, fuck yeah.
Good, yeah. You know, I'm clapping at the Neverending Story when that white horse is drowning in tar.
That's a flying. It's not a horse.
It's a horse.
It's horse adjacent, and that's all I need to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got the same face.
How do you guys feel about zebras?
Fuck zebras even more than horses.
Yeah, those are like I don't know if I can say that anymore, but those are just they're horse adjacent enough of a problem.
Horse adjacent, yeah. And worse, like, because you can't even ride him.
I think you can ride
him. You can't ride probably. A zebra.
I mean, you can.
I mean, you can't.
No, yeah. look up someone yeah, trying to ride a fucking tall. Zebra. You cannot break. You cannot break a zebra.
If you're running a zebra, your feet are flat on the ground. You're so wait, tall, Robert. What?
No,
you're so you, long.
You cannot no, ride a fucking zebra. You just can't ride a zebra. I don't know why you guys are fighting me on this. I don't know what makes you guys such zebra experts.
I bet Mansa Musa fucking rode zebras.
No. Nobody rode zebras. Camels?
If you can ride a camel, you can ride a zebra.
No, camels are docile. Zebras are feral as fuck. Zebras will bite you immediately.
But I mean,
with no provocation.
Zebras will bite you?
That's every animal.
No, yeah. Zebras will no. Zebras are like it's like if you made a breed between like a wasp and a horse. Like zebras just want to fuck your day up.
All right, I mean, you apparently know more about zebras than neither of us.
I've done a lot of research into zebras. I want to go zebra hunting one day. Fuck zebras. Yeah. I hate zebras.
You know, there's this thing in Mexico they do quite often where they grab.
I don't like where this is going.
They grab a donkey.
Oh, God.
Just a good old donkey. They paint him white. They give him black stripes. And they just walk him around. It's like, hey, you want to take a picture with a zebra? Give me $5.
I thought that was going way different.
I'm just telling you a fact I know.
They do a lot of things with donkeys in Mexico, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I don't know about all that.
Yeah. Who's to say if it's real? Anyone just Google donkeys.
Google Mexican all right, donkeys.
Mexican donkeys.
That sounds dangerous.
All right. Any other nitpicks with this? I've got one more, but I want somebody else to take a turn. If you've got
anything. I don't really have anything. I probably have to think on it longer. But like, there's not a whole lot I dislike about this movie. What's your other nitpick?
And I don't dislike these things. I'm just saying this is a little thing that they kind of gloss over, and they're just like, yes, of course.
Uh-huh.
So Saruman just creates gunpowder for this. Like, he just invents it.
I don't think he invents it. He probably just had the knowledge.
So he knew about gunpowder the whole time?
When does gunpowder come up?
How do you think they blow up
the... Oh, yeah. I would just jump to guns.
Might not even be gunpowder. It could have just been another type of explosive. Another type of explosive powder. Maybe that's why they needed so much of it, because it didn't have the same propulsion power as black powder does.
There's also magic in this movie.
Four fucking minds full.
There is magic, but I'm saying if they've got this like explosive powder, which is at least analogous to gunpowder, why don't they make cannons and shit?
I mean, that's just the next step. That's for Lord of the Rings 3.
Do they not use any cannons? And...
I mean, I'm sure, Dan, even
it's
just historically accurate, there's a big gap between the invention of gunpowder and cannons. I'm sure it wasn't even called gunpowder. They're probably just doing fun fireworks.
Yeah, true. Okay, Nine Center. So when you type in the invention of gunpowder, the first Google image is literally people shooting arrows with gunpowder.
Okay.
Probably improbable. Maybe he just... I don't know how hard it is. I don't actually know how you make gunpowder. So maybe he just had a very limited amount of it. I was like, we got to use all of it to blow up this wall.
Yeah, like it had taken them like 40 years to get that amount of gunpowder.
Yeah, and fucking Wormtongue almost blew it up by holding a candle over it.
Yeah, they also just let like Wormtongue go, which is a weird thing.
I guess
me.
That's my biggest nitpick is like...
That's awful.
This is a medieval time. Like, yeah, this is medieval times. Like, you can execute these people. Especially for, like, all the pain he's caused your kingdom.
I do like how they throw him down this improbably long flight of stairs. And then he's like, oh, God, I'm so broken. And then they're like, and then Theoden's like, I'm going to kill this guy. And Aragorn's like, I think enough blood has been spilt on his behalf, which is not really like if a guy just murdered 30 people, you wouldn't be like, listen, there's been enough killing. Like, we can't kill him now.
Yeah.
It's like, of course, kill that guy.
Yeah.
But then Wormtongue immediately, as soon as he says, like, let him go. He's like, out of my way, and he's like, yeah, running.
He gets up onto a fucking zebra and just like runs away.
Yeah. After he's been thrown down this flight at like stone steps, where he's clearly got like broken ribs and shit.
Yeah. Hey man, he was fighting for his life though. It's that adrenaline rush.
I didn't like that they let him go. That really rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah.
That felt true. Like the movie shit you or the storytelling stuff you feel like you should do. But to no gain. Like no they gain. Didn't even have to make a moment out of it. They could have just been like
he could have just escaped in the turmoil of all of it.
Yeah, even that I think would have been less upsetting. Because it's like these guys
just shows you
Aragorn
Aragorn's character, how good of a man Aragorn is.
I mean, he already was, but these guys don't like. I don't know. They're not. They're counting killing people. You know, they're not that like. They're still killing. They gotta kill.
Yeah, they're just killing these like nameless beasts.
Yeah,
and it's like hold on, you can't kill Wormtongue. He's a person.
No one would have judged. I guess what I'm saying is, no one would have judged these characters any different if Wormtongue. Yeah, if you just didn't deal with him that way. I don't think this adds to anyone at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, all they got to do is be like, just tie him to the end of a horse and then like slap the horse on the butt.
Yeah.
And just be like, yeah, fine, whatever. The horse will find its way back with or without him. So.
Yeah. Like, hey, good luck talking your way out of this one, you piece of shit.
Yeah, zebras bite.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to move into trivia corner. We don't have too much trivia for this one. But we've already dispersed a little bit of it. The biggest trivia, I think, is the one that everyone knows. But
everyone knows about the broken toes.
Yeah, Viggo Mortensen. Elmer, do you know about this yet?
Well, I was like, holy shit, that was good. Like, because he was going so hard in that scene. And, like, the way the shot is set up with the bucket, or what was it?
Like a helmet.
A helmet just flying perfectly. I literally just had like a out loud reaction to it. And Robert was like, well, that's because that man was in real pain when he dropped to his knees.
Yeah, he broke two toes. And Jackson said he was really impressed with the shout of pain. Aragorn cried out, realizing only later it was pain for his toes.
I love that Jackson got this because he kept on telling Viggo, like, no. Kick it harder. I want you to, I want the helmet to land closer to the camera.
Yeah.
Kick it harder. Peter Jackson, God. You dick.
What a dick. Mortensen later remarked that the only reason that it was even mentioned on the DVD release was because he was an actor and that the stunt crew were injured way worse and pushed through it.
Yeah.
So Viggo Mortensen's a good guy.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, Viggo Mortensen's a fucking crazy man. Did you know he also speaks 7 languages?
Yeah, and he actually put in the Fellowship of the Ring, he pushed for more of his lines to be in Elvish since he just could memorize it so quickly.
Jesus. What kind of brain shape do you need to have to be able to just memorize languages like that?
The same one that puts you in a green book.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah. Wow.
The same one that can eat a whole pizza.
Oh shit. Dedicated.
The same they can eat 50 hot dogs in a row. God. Alright, I got a little bit of trivia for you guys. So Treebeard is actually voiced by an actor who plays one of the other characters. So I'll let you guys guess which one it is. To refresh your memories, Rob is in the lead by half a point.
Okay. I feel like Robert probably knows the answer to this one, so this is great question.
I do, so I'm just gonna get a point. Gonna get a point right here. But Elmer, here's a chance.
I wanna say Andy Serkis, but it feels like it's gonna be a trick question and Andy Serkis is the easy answer. So which I think someone that can go deep. It's not Gandalf, is it?
I'm not going to address your answer until you say final answer.
I'm going to say the guy who voices the dwarf.
Yeah. It's Gimli.
Oh, is it?
It is.
Gimli. John Rhys Davies. Yeah.
I mean, that was an educated guess, but that was a sincere guess.
You can kind of hear it. He just slows down his voice and really intones.
Yeah. He sounds like he has a beard.
Yeah. He does. For a tree that is named Treebeard. Yeah. That's, which is one of the all-time awful
best,
names.
No, best name. A bearded tree. No. That's a great name. Right to the point. It's not similar to anybody else's name in the series. Perfect name.
Yeah. All right, let's jump over to Oscar Corner. So this movie was nominated for 6 Oscars, including Best Picture, and it won 2. What 2 did it win?
I learned nothing from last week, so I don't remember what... You know, I think some of these categories have been renamed. But I'm going to go for editing. And whatever the production equivalent is.
So like production design and editing?
Yes.
Okay,
Rob, what about
you? I'm going for visual effects and production design.
Oh, I'm an idiot. I'm such a fucking idiot.
Rob gets 1 point for visual effects. Homer gets 0 points. It was best sound editing and visual effects.
Oh, best sound. Okay. I thought you were going to say best score again. I'm like, no, the first one won for best score. It's the same score as the first one. Yeah. How can it win?
The only thing that's different is the Rohan theme.
Mm. Oh, that's true. That is, yeah, that's pretty big. Okay. I take it back.
Pretty fucking great. This was the 75th Academy Awards that was nominated. What won Best Picture instead of Lord of the Rings?
Fuck. In 2002.
Can you give us... Or no, the nominee is going to make it too easy.
No, it won't.
Okay. You want me to get... If you're struggling...
I have no fucking idea.
I'm just not good with like get a year, what movies, you know?
Yeah, just give us the nominees.
Like okay, the nominees are The Pianist, Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, The Hours, Gangs of New York,
ooh,
and Chicago.
Ooh. I think it was The Pianist.
It is The Pianist.
You're both wrong. It was Chicago.
Wait, really? Chicago won Best Picture?
Chicago won Best Picture.
Damn. Cool.
Wow.
That's just good trivia to know.
Yeah, The Pianist won Best Director for Roman Polanski, LOL, and Best Actor for Adrian Brody. Adrian Brody was the youngest man to ever win the Best Actor.
And then he went on to star in King Kong. Peter Jackson comes for all the Oscar winners.
Yeah, exactly. You can't get away from him. Yeah, that's good stuff. This is it. What do you think, Elmer? What are your final thoughts on the second entry in Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, how into it are you?
This movie slams. I am so excited for 3. And it makes up for the slowness of 1. It's such a good movie. In every I just can't believe we have action this good and drama this good in the same thing. That's so rare.
Yeah. And the fact that it's like the basis of D&D.
This movie is the basis of D&D?
Well, it's just the basis of high fantasy in general. Like, Tolkien...
Yeah, this is as we know it. Man. The huge battle scenes, this is the modern action fantasy blockbuster.
Yeah.
Which we don't have any anymore. They're all gone. But this is like... Yeah, it's stripping all like the fairiness of it and making it dark and gritty is what Game of Thrones kind of had that was its whole position in the market.
Yeah.
And this is just so authentic and so sincere. There's not a lot of stuff like this anymore.
Yeah. I do think too this the pacing of this movie is spot on. Like, I think that my biggest problems from the first film come from how it's kind of paced out. And, like, as much as I enjoy seeing this character interactions and seeing how, like, calm and serene everything is before the adventure begins, I do think that at the end of the day, a lot of the stuff felt piecemeal in Fellowship,
mm-hmm.
Just because it would feel like it felt like it's one of those movies that could have ended three times before it actually ended. Whereas this movie, this does not feel like 3 hours, and they're about the same length. They're both about like 2:59, I think.
I think they're within like 5 minutes of each other.
Yeah, but this movie just it flies by, and like I'm just locked in the entire time. The pacing is fucking perfect. And again, the way that they cut Helm's Deep and just all the stories together in the third act is so watchable.
Yeah, and considering that nothing really happens for about like two of these storylines, like Merry and Pippin, they're kind of just in the background. It's like, hey, we got these trees and stuff, and they're gonna go fight Isengard. Frodo and Sam, nothing really they kind of just go.
That's more about just like Gollum, I think, and just knowing that Gollum is like part of their party now and is just this looming threat moving into the third movie.
I mean, that is the big like thread at the end of this movie, right? Like that's the part that is not tied up at all. Like the biggest cliffhanger. So I think it's like it feels so worth it because now I know three, like we've had every end of the spectrum for Gollum. So like three is just going to be like, where within that spectrum is he going to actually fucking land?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll find out.
I can't wait to see the third one. I'm so excited.
Yeah. 3 hours, 20 minutes. I've been waiting the whole time.
I've been waiting the entire time to see. Yeah. With like, this is.
Does this still hold the record for most Oscars won by a single film?
For the third one?
Yeah.
I believe it does.
Man.
I think I think it might be tied with Titanic.
Oh, okay. Man.
But also no acting nominations, which seems still like insane to me.
Yeah.
Who would you put in there?
Circus for sure.
I mean, they're never going to respect him. So yeah. Him aside. Right.
Everyone in the Academy, like who's in the Academy right now, has to die before he'll get any respect. I definitely throw Sean Astin in there, 100%.
Yeah,
I think he's great. I honestly think like Aragorn is like Viggo Mortensen's good enough to get at least a nomination.
Yeah, good supporting.
Yeah,
yeah. Even like Theoden the King, supporting actor. Like,
yeah.
I think it's hard. You couldn't really pick a lead actor in these movies.
That's actually true.
That's just how.
No matter who you say, someone would feel like that's not right.
Yeah, maybe Frodo. Yeah, Frodo or Gandalf.
Yeah,
I don't even know.
Yeah, it is technically Frodo because of the ring, but it's not the right answer.
Yeah, I mean they all still have enough screen time to have like their own movie. So
yeah.
Who's to say? All right, nuts. Well, we'll talk to you next week.